welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Big thank you to the show sponsors, Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Battleborn Tree Service, and Truck Envy. We've got a special guest in studio today, someone I've known 20 years, something like that, 18 years. Dave Baronio, the most handsome man in hunting. You laugh. What's your Instagram handle?
It's
Hollywood something.
Hollywood Dave.
Yeah, uh-oh. Exactly. Okay.
I did not give myself that name.
Okay.
It goes way back when, and we'll get into the TV show, but
okay.
They insisted I had social media. I didn't want to, and they go, okay, Hollywood, we're going to make it. So it stuck. Yeah.
So as we were talking about before we went to air here, gosh, known you a long time. You're a Gardnerville guy, or technically Southlake?
Southlake. I grew up in Zephyr Cove, yeah. And after college at UNR, I moved to Gardnerville, and I lived there for 17 years.
You were a skier or something in college, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I grew up ski racing up in Lake Tahoe. That was my intro into fitness and the mountains. My father was an avid hunter, but as an athlete, getting up to a certain level, that pretty much took over my life. So I started out as a peewee, but then as I started hitting an elite level, you know, competing in Junior Olympics, then I won at the Junior Olympics up in Jackson Hole, Wyoming when I was 15, which launched me onto the men's U.S. development team. And then it was skiing in the North Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere during the summers.
Yeah.
Traveling to New Zealand and, you know, for multiple summers to race and train down there. So basically I was on snow 9 months out of the year, which definitely cut into hunting. But, you know, it's always been in my blood. It's always been.
How'd you get into hunting?
Yeah. So my dad, he grew up in Vallejo, California, back when Vallejo was surrounded by pheasant fields.
Yep.
So he grew up hunting pheasant and duck, and with he and his best friends crabbing along the coast down out of Bodega Bay, getting long neck clams, you know, salmon fishing, bass fishing, everything that crawled on the earth, swam in the water, you know, or flew in the air was shot or trapped or anything else. So basically when he went to college, he'd get a 50-pound bag of rice, and he and his buddy would go out and fill the freezer with whatever game meat was in his age, day and age, when California was a little bit different. You know, when he moved up to Tahoe and my sister and I came to fruition, we really didn't have beef until we were 13. So we lived off of game meat. And so from a very young age, that's what I was accustomed to. You know, we'd have abalone dinners and we'd have crab dinners and we'd, you know, venison all the time. And so even though my dad was more of a subsistence hunter, not a trophy hunter, he just wanted to put meat in the freezer for family.
I hate that term, trophy hunter.
Trophy
yeah,
hunter?
No, it's, yeah. Well, to put it just on a basics, you know, there's a lot of reasons guys hunt. And the reasons that I hunt, we can get into that a little bit later and why I guide.
And I get the connotation, right? The Jimmy Johns of the world. But I always hate when someone says, are you a trophy hunter or do you hunt for meat? And I'm like, hey, look, if all I turn up above a 400-inch bull, that's what I'm going for. I wouldn't consider myself a Jimmy John's, but
a lot of people, they have a misconception.
Oh, 100%.
You know, a trophy hunter, I'm going after a mature animal that is of past, you know, a breeding age or, you know, getting to the end of it. Typically, those are going to be your bigger animals. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is a trophy. That is beautiful. But a trophy is also in the eye of the beholder. You know, a young kid taking a fork and horn, that's a trophy to him. That's a beautiful thing that he gets the meat, he gets the experience, but also memories with his family. But for me, I want to take older class animals, you know, that are past a breeding age, and that keeps, whether you're managing a private piece of ground or just being a contributor to Nevada wildlife by killing that, you know, an upper age class, typically those are trophy animals.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We found,
oh, yeah.
I got to keep you two separate this show. It's going to be Baronio and Catalano, but on your elk hunt, Catalano,
yeah,
we found that Forky up there out in that unit, or was that a 3x? Remember that giant deer that morning?
Yeah, that was a Forky.
That was a trophy to me. I was like, man, if I had a deer tag right now, I'd be going for that thing.
I'd be chasing that thing with a spork. Yeah. That thing was so cool.
That was awesome.
Yeah. It's not a forky at that point. It's a 2-point.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's a big difference between a forky and a 2-point.
28-inch wide, 18-inch tall.
Oh, he was a stud. Yeah. Trophy hunting, anyway, off the rails there a little bit. Yeah. But you got out of hunting for a while with the skiing thing.
Well, I wasn't out of hunting. I just didn't have the opportunity to go as much.
Season overlap.
Just like in Nevada, you know, most kids that get to kill their first deer are 12 years old, you know,
right.
start to apply. So I would always go pheasant hunting with dad. I was always going duck hunting, but the amount of time that I was in, that I had to take off of school during the winter to travel around the United States for ski racing was a lot of time. So I couldn't miss, I think one semester I was in school 13 days. And so, you know, I was in athletics, but it never took away my love for hunting. Now, after I retired, I think I was 19 or 20 from ski racing, I went to coaching. So I coached the junior Olympic team. And after a couple of years of doing that, Tom Arnstein, who is the coach at UNR, said, "Bronio, do you want to come out of retirement, put on some race boots?" And it's amazing that when you can speak about something, even though I wasn't, you know, racing gates, but speaking about technique and angle and line and everything else to these kids, your muscle memory takes over. And I didn't have race boots on for 3 years, and I put my race boots back on, raced for UNR, and had some of my best years. The nice thing about going to UNR and going to college, coming out of retirement, well, one was I was older than most of the other students in school. So I wasn't part of the fraternities or anything else. My weekends, I was consumed in duck hunting out in Fallon, you know, going out to Greenhead, staying in the trailer on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
You guys had a trailer out there?
We did. Poacherville.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's where I would do my homework and I'd study. And then it also, you know, afforded me that time in early fall to do archery hunts before our training really got ramped up for ski racing.
Did you get a degree?
Barely.
Okay, but in what?
In business marketing and management.
Where was the transition between this is something I'm passionate about, I like doing as a hobby, now I'm going to like make a go of it and make a career?
You're talking the hunting.
Hunting, yeah. I think I asked Tim Burnett the same question. Yeah. I'm always intrigued because it's something I love to do, but my brief foray into the hunting industry when I was working for a gun company, I went, I don't like this. I don't like making it a job. I like doing it for me. Mm. So I'm always interested in guys like you.
Let me kind of get into that story and it'll lead into where I am today. So, you know, I was bow hunting in Nevada. I'd draw tags. Is that early August? I'd be able to hunt every year. Then I'd duck hunt like crazy. And that was really my passion. Well, there was a small archery shop down in Gardnerville and
Gunny Benson.
Yeah, so
was that who it was?
That's who owned it.
Yeah, Trevin Stoltzfus with Outback Outdoors back in Colorado. He was originally with Best of the West Hunting Show when it used to have an archery segment.
Now Trevin
reached out down there and said, you know, I'm looking to be able to hunt in Nevada, but I just don't know where to start. And I think it was Gunny said, I want to introduce you to Dave Baronio. He's just a passionate bow hunter. Because he had seen me on the mountain. He knows how I attack things. And so he introduced me to Trevin Stoltzfus when he was with Best of the West. And Trevin reached out and we started having some conversations. He said, I would really like to hunt Nevada, but I don't know where to start. I said, and I just took a leap of faith. I said, Trevin, why don't we just apply together? I've got Nevada points. You're a Colorado resident. Let's apply together up in the, you know, we'll go to the East Humboldts. And,
Area 10 can't beat that.
We'll apply together. Guarantee. And then I've got the research and I know who's going to pack us in. Let's go from there. He drew the tag. I'd never met the guy in person. You talk about how somebody's got to be on the mountain, but I'm like, hey, I just want to hunt. And if I have to hike away from you, I'm going to hike away from you. But we gained this friendship before we packed in, you know, I think it was 13 miles on horses. The morning we packed in was the day we met. We packed in on horses. We spent a week filming the show, archery hunting, just had a great time. And, you know, I've never been a television guy, public speaking or anything else. And he really liked how I was just natural on television, on the show, being able to just bounce back and forth in our banter and have fun and laugh, and also a bow hunter.
So that
kind of launched into that friendship. And had a great week up there. We didn't kill anything, but we had some really good stocks, great opportunity, a lot of bucks. And after that, he said, Dave, he got out of Best of the West and started Outback Outdoors. Now, Outback Outdoors was a bow hunting show on the Sportsman's Channel that he started, and it was multiple hosts, so it was always three hosts. And there were a couple other guys in the very beginning, but it ended up being Trevin, myself, and Adam Wells at the, you know, for the last 11 years.
Okay.
So I got into doing television on the Sportsman's Channel, Friday night, full draw.
I remember that one, like, full draw,
so
yeah.
That's what we did.
We have got to take a break. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. So we left off at the end of the last segment there, Baronio. Outback Outdoors, I think those were the days I was walking into Cabela's and I used to see you up on the wall. You were doing, that was the Outback Outdoors era, correct?
That was the Outback Outdoors
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
You were the poster child for Cabela's back in the day.
Yeah, a little bit. Hence where I got that nickname.
The Hollywood moniker.
And I just couldn't get rid of it. I didn't make it for myself.
Obviously, you still can't get rid of it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I just had to embrace it. And when somebody gets to know me, they know that it's not, you know, it's not for ego, but it was more of just, you know, the playful banter. And when Outback Outdoors, the show wanted me to have social media, and I was adamant I wasn't going to.
Right.
They made me a Facebook and Instagram and call me Hollywood Dave. And I couldn't get away from
it. Yeah. You do the first hunt. You film it. You guys unsuccessful on that hunt.
Yeah, we were unsuccessful, but we had a great time, and the camaraderie on the mountain, but also the dynamics of how we could work against each other to create a wonderful show, to tell a story. And so that's kind of where that took off. And when Trevin left Best of the West, he started Outback Outdoors. And he said, Dave, I loved hunting with you. I'd really like you to, you know, be one of the hosts for Outback Outdoors. And I thought, well, this could be a great opportunity just to be able to hunt new places and go different areas and open up some doors. I didn't realize the doors that it would eventually open. Yet in television, you don't make money. People think, oh, you make money and this and that. You pay more money to be on the network.
Yeah.
And you just get the money from the sponsors to cover that. So was everything free? Well, we had, you know, equipment that was free from sponsors, but we paid for everything as well. You know, all of our hunts, all of our tags. I still had to hold a full-time job, you know, here in Nevada. But what it did is the relationships that started in Outback Outdoors were pretty incredible, you know, meeting some different people in the industry. So there were a couple hunts we did in Wyoming and in Utah with the R&K Hunting Company. Now, what we did, we paid a trespass fee to be able to hunt their property. It's a fully guided operation, and I can get to that later because that's now after 20 years.
What you're doing, right?
Who I work for. So we met Daniel Richens, had a great time up on the mountain. We filmed some shows there, and Daniel and I got along really well. And he said, Dave, you know, have you ever thought of guiding and just adding something else into doing what you're doing? And in the beginning, I thought, well, I don't want to guide because the time on the mountain is really precious to me. I don't want to be up on the mountain with some guy that's a jerk and a drain. And, you know, I want to be on the mountain and have a full experience because I don't get as much time as I want. So I want that to be, you know, the pinnacle of what I do. But I gave it a chance and I thought, okay, I'm going to see how guiding is. Well, that first year I was guiding in Wyoming, Queen Mountain Ranch. It's south of Evanston. And I did have guys that were kind of a drain, you know, but the switch flipped. I went, it doesn't matter how he is up on the mountain. I'm still getting to work on my calling of elk. I'm still getting to glass animals. I'm still getting to spot and stalk. And it was amazing because I could fine tune my craft no matter who I was on the mountain with. But it also gave me a platform to change that person's life, to have deep conversations, to give him an experience, to show him a reverence for an animal, you know, and how I break down an animal and the care and consideration and how sometimes quick it can happen. And it doesn't look like, you know, somebody completely, you know, butchered everything. There's a strategy to breaking things down, but also just the respect and then packing it off the mountain. And you can change somebody's life as a guide, being in service. That just started taking off. And after that first year of guiding, Daniel said, I really loved how you were up here. Do you want to just run the ranch? So for the next 12 years, I ran the Queen Mountain Lodge from end of August getting it ready, hunting all of September and October, and then I'd come home. That's kind of where the guiding started. And that
home being here or back, South Lake Tahoe?
Back here in Nevada.
Back Nevada, yeah, okay.
Back here in Nevada. And at that time, I was living in Gardnerville.
Right, right.
Raising a family. Well, that was a huge transition in my life that I realized that the television and sharing a story and, you know, what some people think, oh, you want to be on television for the ego. It was not about that. It was about inspiring, teaching, you know, storytelling, everything else. Yeah. And just letting people into my life as, you know, a mountain athlete and a bow hunter. Well, being in service to guys on the mountain and to my guides and to camp spoke more to my heart and soul than anything. And that's when I left Outback Outdoors. And I said, I'm going to become a full-time guide. So the guiding took over, you know, full-time. I started guiding in New Zealand. I've been down to Argentina guiding, Mexico, Idaho. So, and then now in Utah, when we got this new ranch in Utah called Thousand Peaks with the R&K Hunting Company, we've got five big properties that we have. And I manage the Thousand Peaks, 40,000 acres up in the Uinta Mountains. We've just finished our seventh year on that. So I'm sitting at 20 years of guiding for the same company.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is that, primarily elk?
It's deer, elk, and moose.
Deer, elk, and moose. Okay. Yeah.
In Wyoming, we did have antelope on there as well. But, you know, the nice thing is being up there and client return clientele all the time, corporate groups, independent guys. And we get to manage a piece of property and hunt elk or deer, you know, for conversation. We get to hunt elk. We pressure them a little bit, but we have the opportunity to back out and not worry about the pumpkin patch and get to work and hunt these animals, you know, day in and day out. Basically, we start archery elk hunting August 15th or right around there. It changes a day or two here and there.
For bulls?
Do you archery. Do cow hunts?
We do cow hunts later in the year. But later in the year, and no, it's not archery, so sorry. But you can
have it. That's Catalano's arch nemesis.
You know
is
what?
Cow elk.
Archery cow elk is one of my favorite, like here in Nevada, archery cow elk is one of my favorite hunts to do. You know, it's so, you don't have the stress. You're not thinking about how big it is or anything.
You
else,
might not have the stress.
Yeah.
They have got Catalano's
number. They've got my number. I've had three or four of their tags and it's yet to put one on the ground.
You got more bulls than cows.
I do.
Nah, go figure.
But it's a great opportunity to just change people's lives and create a camp that guys will come back every year because they know what they get. You know, we have a lot of animals on the property and we're very selective on where we hunt them and how we hunt them. That way the next week, the guys have the exact same experiences the week before, you know, not pressuring these animals and keeping
them. Oh, so you're not in the same, canyon or something every week.
That's why we can hunt
them
from August 15th to the middle of November.
Yeah. Well, 40,000 acres is a pretty good chunk of land.
It's a good chunk of land, but you know, with elk, you start pressuring them and, you know, and we're surrounded by some public land and some private land. Yeah. You were asking about, we're hunting bulls August 15th archery, but with as much time as we spend on the mountain, we know where those elk are feeding. We know where they're bedding. We know how to intercept them. There's no calling. There's very little sitting on wallows at that time. It's all still hunting the timbers, intercepting them as they're coming from their feet.
Oh.
And it's just, there's a science to it, but it opens up another opportunity. And we're able to kill velvet bulls.
Yeah.
Just
ambush hunting.
Just ambush hunting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Still hunting in the timber and you know, sneaking into bedding areas.
That's
just
cool.
Being really stealthy. And so we're able to do that. Then we're able to, you know, the pre-rut and then the rut and then the post-rut. And then we get into late season when there's migrating bulls coming in. So we can hunt them during all these seasons. The nice thing is on the ranch on September 1st, we can start rifle hunting. So those guys that don't get a chance to hunt bugling bulls because they're not archery guys are now able to, you know, have that experience. And most of our rifle guys are shooting them in bow range anyway, you know, which is
rifle hunting on September 1.
September 1.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yes. I was amazed. So my dad killed a bull. He drew that Henry Mountain tag a couple of years back and killed a heck of a nice bull. But I was shocked. He was hunting the runt with a muzzle loader over there, and I thought that was crazy, but you guys are hunting September 1 with rifles.
Yeah.
Is that because it's on the ranch?
It's on a CWMU.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And so with that that project that Utah has, we get a certain number of tags allocated to us. Daniel gets to set the dates of when we start rifle and when we end, and that's deer and elk. And that way we can kind of manage how we hunt and where we hunt. That CWMU program does allow for, when you enter it, you get allocated a certain number of tags, and then the public, Utah residents only, get a certain number of tags that they can apply for in a CWMU. That way the public can hunt our private property during certain weeks that we've allocated for them. We don't have clients during that week, but what's fun is we don't get paid for it. We don't get, you know, gratuities or anything else. They don't stay at the lodge, but we get to help the public get to experience a hunt and on our ranch, an elk hunt 17.5.
Yeah.
And so they get to hunt a piece of property that we're killing giant deer and good elk. I mean, they're not Nevada bulls. It's a different, you know, it's different genetics. It's different age class, but you know, we typically sit around that 280, 290, you know, we kill a number over 300, you know, every year, but we don't sell it as, you know, this is a trophy hunt. If we average 290, that's a 290 bull in Utah.
It's a good bull.
It's a good bull.
And it's even fun, Montana or any of that.
Guys.
Yeah.
It's fun for guys. This year I killed a 350 with a client, Adobe Bat, one of my other guides, and I got to take out a client on a day that was, you know, in between, and we ended up finding a smoker bull. And I mean, there are those one-offs. We kill a lot of 320s, you know, 315, 320, 330, but they're not around every corner. But the guy, a guy that wants to have an experience being in elk every day, every morning, evening.
Yeah.
And having, you know, 100% opportunity is really pretty
well,
special.
Well, and that starts the fire.
It does.
You know,
absolutely.
When people are getting into the animals and experiencing that whole wild side of it,
here's something that's really fun is we could be getting into an area and bulls are screaming. We know elk are in there. The thermals start to change. They're still screaming. And then I tell my client, okay, we're backing out. What?
Yeah.
They're screaming right there. Yeah. Nope. So we have the opportunity to just let them be elk and then hit them. Maybe we don't even go back in there in the evening because we know that our next morning is going to be just like, you know, we're pretty close to what we just had. Let's go to a different area.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
I hear the music. We have got to go to break. Do not go anywhere. More coming up next with Dave Baronio on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Hey, welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Rightful Liberty Arms, Shooting Performance Institute, Battleborn Tree Service, and Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. Man, we've been ripping through the show so far. I'm not going to take any more time getting off the rails. I want to get into the hunt brokerage. You've been guiding R&K, running the ranch up there, doing that stuff. How did you get plugged in with Mark Warnke? And I know that might be a long story, but if you can't keep it simple, and then talk to me about hunt brokerage and exactly brokering hunts. And what that is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So Mark Warnke, the owner, Top End Adventures, he and I used to do the archery train to hunt challenges. That's the physical fitness, you know, heavy sandbags, high mileage. It's like a Tough Mudder or a Spartan race, but you're shooting a bow. So for a number of years, we did these competitions and competed against each other to a national level. Well, that's where we gained a friendship. And he has always seen me in the hunting industry and the guiding and my own personal hunts. And he thought, Dave, you know, as you're getting older, you know, what's kind of your strategy? What are you doing when you're not guiding? So on and so forth. And yes, I have the wedding business. So I do perform weddings.
That's right. Yeah.
For the last 15 years, which is something I get to do at home and be in service to others. You know, with his success in hunt brokerage, thought, you know, this might be something. I've never been a salesman, but I love to talk hunting. And I love to create relationships and listen to people's stories. And with this, it gives me an opportunity to help those who have a tough barrier to entry. You figure all of us out here in the West, we're used to applying for different states.
Right.
And it's nothing new to us. Yes, every state has a little bit of different timing. They've got a different program. But from those in the Midwest and out East, they have no idea how to, you know, where do I even start? It's pretty daunting.
Great point. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a lot of different groups out there that will apply you for hunts, you know, have hunts to sell. Top End Adventures is a place that we work with a number of different outfitters, booking hunts from grizzly in Alaska all the way down to Argentina and New Zealand and Africa. But we, you know, a lot of our hunts are elk and mule deer and moose and black and brown bears.
Quintessential Western stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yep, basically the Western. And all of our outfitters have guaranteed tags, except for Colorado, where the outfitters may apply them in the draw so they don't have to use a landowner voucher. These clients who book a hunt with us, with the outfitter, know that they're going to guarantee themselves an elk tag without having to build up a lot of points, without having to, you know, we do have that a one-off here and there, like Wyoming, where we know with this outfitter, you have to have 4 points or 5 points. So when we have a client call us and say, I've got this many points in Wyoming, you know, that's where I'd want to place them. But our New Mexico hunts, our Utah hunts, our Colorado hunts, our Idaho hunts, Canadian hunts, Alaska hunts, we can guarantee them a tag without having to apply. So
talk me through the process real quick. I'm Jim Bob from Arkansas. I call you guys.
Not uncommon.
Yeah. Jim Bob. Yeah, Jim Bob. So I call you guys and I say, hey, I want to kill an elk. Let's go easy. Elk. Then what do you guys do? Do you narrow the field for them? Like, hey, what state? Or, I mean,
yeah, what's
do I hire you?
Well, not. I keep my guiding and R&K very separate from Top End Adventures.
Okay.
I don't like to mix it, although Mark will book clients with R&K.
Okay.
I just prefer to keep a nice, you know, black and white.
Yeah, with clean separation.
Clean
yeah.
separation with my guiding, because I take a lot of pride in that operation up there. That's why we have such great success with clients, Top End Adventures. I'll get on a call with guys. I'll make probably 30 or 40 cold calls a day.
Okay.
These are guys that find us on Facebook or Google search on guaranteed tags or, you know, whatever we've posted out there. And so I'll get on the phone with you and it's important that I get to learn who you are and what you're about, all the parameters. You know, have you hunted elk before? We'll just stay with elk.
What do you weigh?
No. Well, that absolutely. Because some yeah. of our horseback hunts or some of the
yeah.
country that you'd hunt in, are you capable to hike mountains? You know, what kind of disabilities do you have? Or is it archery or rifle? You know, we go through all the parameters. How many guys? What kind of experience do you want to have? What kind of success? What quality of animals do you want to go after? And also, what kind of price point do you want to stay within? Because I want to be respectful of that. Mark and I are not there to sell you or push you on any hunt.
Okay.
We have our different outfitters, and a lot of these outfitters, we book 80%+ of their hunts because outfitters don't want to get on 30 or 40 calls a day. They're still ranching. They're fixing equipment.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
out guiding, you know, other animals during different times of the year. They don't have time to do that. And most of the time, a great outfitter has a terrible Facebook page and,
100%.
And no website, because you know what those outfitters are good at?
Yeah, putting holes in things.
Putting
yeah,
holes in
100%.
Things. Yep. And so the relationship we have with them, we know what our clients will get. Understanding your parameters, it allows me to say, okay, Billy Bob or Joe Bob, whatever.
Jim Bob,
whatever yeah. your name is. These are the couple of hunts that I feel would really resonate with you. And these are the different states and here's the different prices. So then I give them, you know, those different options, prices, you know, all the things. And they say, yeah, this would work for the three of us going, or this would work for the four of us going. And then I take care of the contracting. My services are 100% free. Unless I book a hunt, I make no money. And the money I do make is the outfitters take care of us on the back end. Because Joe Bob, you're going to go to camp in New Mexico and you're going to sit next to Jeff from Maryland and you're going to be talking about the hunt and you're going to both know that you paid the exact same amount and he booked through the outfitter. So mm-hmm. the outfitter pays us on the back end for just doing the calls and the marketing and everything else. But you don't
gotcha.
Pay anything different than the other guy that books straight with the outfitter. Because there's nothing worse for a guy to go in there and go, I paid $2,000 more
exactly.
because I used this
exactly.
guy over here.
Yeah.
No, it's about relationships. And with guiding, when you lead everything you do in life, being in service to help somebody solve an issue, to be in service to that person, whether it's guiding, brokeraging, performing weddings, whatever you do, when you lead in service, you know that God will always provide and you will live in abundance.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm there to help guys find the right hunt for them, guaranteed tags in the price point that they want and the experience they have. And it's beautiful because I help a lot of people achieve the goals of killing. Well, I want to kill a grizzly bear. I want to kill a moose. I want to get, and all these different outfitters that we've been working with for years, we know what we get with them. And they're,
do you, when you're, let's say networking, or, I mean, it's important to have these contacts with hunters. Do you approach outfitters at all? Like, hey, here's who I am. Here's what we do. We'd like to book hunts through you guys. Do you vet the outfitters at all?
Yeah. So a lot of our outfitters that we've been working for years, because we have that respect and the understanding, we know what we get with them. We trust them. when we need more inventory, we talk to them about other outfitters that would you book with this guy. Most of our new outfitters come in through strong referrals. We don't just go to a show and say, hey, we'd like to book hunts with you. We want to know who we're getting. And if
right.
you can talk to 15 different outfitters, one guy calls you back, his place is the best place. You go there and you don't see an elk. You know? That's a story I hear a lot.
Yeah.
And guys will pay year, you know, they're tired of going with outfitters that they're not seeing anything. I got on a call with a guy that hunted in Idaho that they were promised they would see a lot of elk. For 5 days, he didn't see a track. He didn't see scat. He didn't see anything. And he was sold a different, you know, painted a whole different picture. Yeah. So all of our outfitters are guys that we've worked with and have come from really strong referrals. And then we test that. We have a client coming in who's very experienced, you know, going on guided hunt. I say, I've got this new outfitter. This is a new operation. We haven't worked with him yet, but he comes from somebody that we really trust. Is it something that you would want to do? Yeah, absolutely. And then we get great feedback from him. We get great feedback from the outfitter. And we say, you know, this is something that I see could be good growth.
We talked before the show. I think that's how Mark and I, our paths crossed. God, 16 years ago now, mm-hmm. I killed a bison and he was there with his son. And I think that's what he was personally like vetting the outfit or something, I think, at that time. Now, it sounds like you guys have grown to a point where now you have repeat clients that you kind of trust to vet these outfitters for you.
Yeah, we do. And, you know, the outfitters that we have, we've got a lot of inventory, but we book, you know, we're usually end of inventory by a year out.
Oh,
you
okay. know,
a year out of the next hunt. That's why we tell guys, you know, if you're planning a hunt, don't wait too long. And if you find a hunt that you really like, lock it in, because in 2 weeks, you might call me back saying, Dave, we're ready. Yeah. I was just waiting for Billy Bob, Joe Bob to sign up. And then I have to say, well, we, you know, those hunts are completely booked. We're going to have to either look at something else or move on to future.
Fourth and final segment of Nevada Backcountry is coming up in a minute on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Fourth and final segment of Nevada Backcountry on this Sunday. Sincere thank you to all of you who take the time out of your day to listen to us. I cut you off at the end there. I waved you off your flight path, Catalano.
Right.
You had a question at the end there?
I'm kind of curious on how do you go about vetting them in relation to their shoot ability? You ask them about their physical abilities. How do you know that they're proficient with the weapon? How do you vet that part of them? You're not going to be chasing an elk for the next 3 days with a gut shot or something.
So there's two different aspects. One of them is with the ranch that I run and guide. I don't get to vet them, and I'll get to that in a minute of how we adapt to that situation. Now, when I'm on the phone with a client and I'm explaining the hunt, what to expect, I want the honesty and I just have to trust what they're saying. But I also lead them into the story of what an elk hunt looks like. You know, out here in the West, it's not uncommon for us to make 40, 50, 60 yard shots on an animal, where you get guys from the Midwest and the East where a 30 yard shot is a long shot to them. So I don't want to tell mistruths so that I can just book a guy, because
it's called lying, Dave. That was a nice way of saying it.
I want to make sure that they know exactly what they're getting into, because one, I owe it to the outfitter that I have spoken with this client enough to understand, okay, are you a 200 to 300 yard rifle shot? Are you a 30 yard archery shot type of guy?
Yeah.
Because, you know, there is a great possibility he's going to be calling a bull into you, you know, 15, 20, maybe 30 yards. You got a good opportunity to do that. But archery elk hunting is a whole different thing. Guys, you know, oh, I'm going to set up here. No, you don't set up behind the tree. You got to set up in front of the tree and don't move. You know, it's all in, there's a strategy to archery elk hunting.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking them through that so they understand what to expect. And then I hope that they are honest in regards to what they're doing. And I tell them, you know, depending on where you go and how you hunt, I need to know the right information so that I'm placing you in the right spot. Because one, you're spending money. You're spending a lot.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of money.
Guys have saved up for years.
Do you want to get the right experience and have the right success? And also with the physical fitness, you know, how old are you? You know, what do you do on a daily basis for work? Are you a farmer rancher, or do you sit behind a sit in a desk all day?
Are you Henry Evans?
Or are you elite mountain athlete?
No, I sit behind a desk. Come on now.
Well, I look at you, you're ripped. You know, but I also wanted to talk to him. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being a couch potato and 10 being an elite athlete, where would you sit on that? Because some of my hunts require you to be a 7. And if you tell me that you're a 7 and you show up and you're a 4, well, now you've just sold yourself short. And we've put you on a hunt that you are going to die on, and you're not going to be able to, your opportunity for success goes way down. We get all different types of people.
Okay.
So
just telling them to be honest and just like be completely honest about all of this.
And we get guys that I like to take on the mountain where I will spend all day just crushing you into the mountain, and I want you right by my side because we're going to go chase some elk.
Yeah.
So because of the way our operation runs, we get a lot of corporate groups. Some of those guys are, you know, maybe brand new to hunting, or, you know, they're used to the whitetail hunting and not hiking a lot on the mountain. So it's really important that as new clients, I mean, a lot of our continued clients or repeat clients understand what they expect. And the beautiful thing is, after they hunt with us once and they see how all of our guides are, they see how we are in preparation for the mountain, a lot of times those guys will come back the next year because they want to get more out of the experience, and they come back healthier. They're proficient. Their diet is better. They've been walking and rucking, you know, and that's really important. Just put a heavy backpack on and ruck a few miles a day just for the body movement and feeling that weight on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But it's important for us that we have good communication with our clients. Okay, if you're breathing too much and you need us to slow down, don't be too proud. Just say, slow down a little bit. Because if I get to the elk and you're not with me, it does us no good.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
So we really try to cater to every one of our clients' abilities. And we've had guys out there that just can't walk that are still successful because of where we can hunt them, how we can hunt them, how we can get them there. And then those guys that can, oh man, we have an experience.
Yeah. You have them shoot. Like for R&K, this is the R&K portion. You have them shoot when they get there, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
So you figure out pretty dang quick, like, okay, this guy can.
Yep. We make the guys that come in, we don't shoot there on the property. We'll shoot them down at the South Fork Lodge where we got a beautiful range. That's another part of the operation that, you know, they have their own clientele that books that ranch. It's 80,000 acres just out of Colville, Utah. Also hunting deer, elk, and moose, mountain lion as well. But the guys that'll rifle hunt will shoot down there. And yes, it's a controlled environment. It's on a shooting sled, or sandbag, and then we'll have the guys shoot off of sticks to see what they're able to do. And then we note that, and our guide will be, you know, will understand, I've got to get this guy into 200 yards. We're not taking a 400, 500, 600 yard shot. Some of our guys, absolutely, they come and they are dialed in for those long shots, and we trust them. But they're pulling out, they have all their, you know, little tools to check the spin of the earth and
that.
I'm an archery guy, so I don't worry about that.
That's not always indicative, though, because money doesn't buy proficiency.
Money doesn't buy proficiency. We get a lot of guys that have those rifles, but when we see that they are not able to pull the trigger on, you know, and hit 400 yards consistently, the guys that come into camp, we have an archery range right there at the lodge. So, you know, we leave the door open, you know, music's playing, the chef is cooking. We got a gourmet chef that works up there. The guys are standing out on the deck, hitting golf balls into the pond. And right below the deck is our archery range right next to the fire pit. I mean, it's just a beautiful setup. And we'll sit there by the fire and these guys will just, you know, plink off arrows. But all of us guides are watching, you know, especially if it's our client. What is he doing? How's he drawing? Is he anchoring in the right spot, or is he just flinging arrows? You know,
You guys do any coaching?
We'll do some coaching. Yeah, absolutely. But we try not to overfill their head with too much to think about. But we may say, hey, just slow down a little bit, think about your anchor point, and be mindful and present in your whole shot process.
Yeah.
And what I really like to tell guys is, you know, when you go home this year, I want every shot to be like you only get one shot. Do the exact same thing. Keep it routine, you know, so that it becomes muscle memory.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, and you know this, when you get on archery elk and you're out there, how many times have you shot an animal where you didn't even remember making the shot because everything was, it was so muscle memory and you were so focused that it just,
just happen.
I make the joke. I just black out and send an arrow, and then I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Cool.
Got him.
Well, hey, dang. Cool. There yeah. I am.
But we will coach. We try not to do too much while yeah. they're there, but we'll watch them and go, okay, you know, Jeff is proficient out to 40, but I'm not going to let him take a 50-yard shot.
Right.
And,
okay. I was just curious about that.
And we let them know that too.
Yeah.
Because on our ranch, it's if you draw blood, that is your animal.
Yeah.
We have a wound loss policy. Yeah. And the reason being is we want guys to be mindful of the shots that they take and not just sending an arrow out there to hit an animal. Yes. You know, we want you to make a good, clean shot. If you have to not take that shot and we have to go chase something else and get into another situation, we'll do that.
Yeah.
But if you wound an animal,
you own it.
And we will have that conversation. The guides, it's what you see, what you smell, what you hear on impact, where he hit. We take all of those factors. If it's a graze across, you know, the top of his hump and we know that bull is going to be fine. Okay,
right.
I'm going to make the decision. You can still hunt, but just know you make that if it's anything in the cavity, or we think that
any form of penetration,
anything of penetration yeah. that could result in the death of that animal, you know, weeks.
Yeah, you're done.
Months down the line, you're done. And so, be mindful of your shot and with rifle.
Oh yeah.
If you're not able to make a 500-yard shot, you know, efficiently, we're not going to have you shoot that.
Yeah, we're not going to let you. Yeah. Okay. I was curious about that because it's, you know, you do see a lot of folks that they're not very proficient with their weapon, and you just kind of worry about that, you know, especially, I'm sure, being a guide. I mean, I'm not a guide, but I could, if I put myself in your shoes, I could see, man, this could really suck.
End poorly for all parties.
Well,
and it's also painting that story of, if I trust that this is the type of hunter you are and you've been real with me, then I know what to expect, and your outfitter knows what to expect. But if you painted this picture that you're this and you can't get to that, you're spending a lot of money to go out there on a camping trip.
Please be
honest with me and let me know what your capabilities are so that we can match that.
Dave Baronio, thank you so much for doing this. Plug the website. How do people get in touch with you?
Top End Adventures would be how you can find us on Facebook and Instagram and on the World Wide Web. You can find me at Hollywood Dave OO on Instagram.
Yeah, buddy.
I don't post a lot, but there's some fun stuff that comes out, especially during the season.
Sincere thank you for coming on the show today. Do not go anywhere. Coming up next is Tom Gresham's Gun Talk.